Saddle up your horses. Well, welcome to the Robin Walters Show, part of the Red Sky Radio Network. Thank you for joining in today. We've got a little different kind of a program, which I hope that you'll appreciate. I'm going to cover something that really nobody else is, but that's part of what this program is about. If you want to reach me, you may, with whatever you have to share, redskyradio777@gmail.com, redskyradio777@gmail.com. Well, what a week this has been with the ceasefire and the prisoner exchange and all that has gone on. And I want to cover that exclusively today, but in a little different way, in the sense that I want to kind of take you on a trip through the day of the exchange, if you didn't see it, and some things that are certainly things to be joyous about, no question about it. But then we're going to do something that I have not heard anybody else do because it takes too long. It's too involved for a soundbite world on TV, and that is, what is the 20-point peace plan? There are some things in here that are going to stun you. And probably lead many of us to believe that this is a good start. Can it be completed? Maybe not. Where's the spiritual implications of this? And whether it's completed or not, the effort put in by Donald Trump and the Trump administration and the team is so just so over the top. People say, well, what if it doesn't work? And people say he should have gotten the Nobel Peace Prize. Well, he will next year. But they say, what if it doesn't work? Well, you know, the Nobel Peace Prize is not contingent upon it working. The Nobel Peace Prize is contingent upon the effort that was put in to a noble cause. Now, the woman who got it, this Machado, I think her name is, from down in Venezuela. Is Venezuela still a dictatorship under, what's his face? Can't think of his name. Maduro? Of course it is. Nothing has actually changed there. But she has done a heroic job of building the resistance to seek change. But she hasn't accomplished the change in the government. They don't have a democracy yet, but she got it based upon the sincerity and the nobility, if you will, of her effort. And that's why whether the situation in Gaza and Israel all collapses and falls apart is not the issue. It's a feature of what went into a process of attempting to make it happen, which so far is so good, but you're going to hear more about that a little later. I'd like to just cover some of my personal observations first, though, before we get into the specific points of it. Because I have to tell you, I just can't describe the joy on the faces of the reunification with the hostages and their families. I mean, the weeping and the sobbing of joy by women swirling around and twirling all over the place. And my gosh, grown men hopping up and down like Mexican jumping beans with tears in their eyes. It's just hard to not, for me to be, it's hard for me to be any less moved than I was at Charlie Kirk's memorial. And I think back, I mean, goodness sakes, what a month this has been. And then I get to President Netanyahu calling Donald Trump the greatest friend, the greatest, bar none, of Israel that Israel has ever had. And nominated him for the Israel Prize, which I understand to be the highest honor given by that nation, and the first time ever, if it is awarded, ever given to a non-Israeli. You see, this is where I got to bring in some biblical components to this. Donald Trump to Israel has become like Cyrus was to the Jews, the Persian from the Mede-Persian Empire, who moved by God, though a pagan, was moved by the Holy Spirit to bless the Jews, provide them with the provisions and the protection to go back to Israel after their long exile. I mean, and Nebuchadnezzar was used by God. Nebuchadnezzar, certainly not a believer. But God called Nebuchadnezzar, Nebi, and I didn't say that, but Nebuchadnezzar, my man, you're my man. I'm using you. I'm sovereign. And so Trump has attained this level of admiration and thanksgiving and extolling his efforts like has never happened in Israel. I mean, the highest award that would ever be given to a non-Israeli. Then there is Trump at the Knesset. Oh, my goodness. People wearing a red Trump makes peace hats. I mean, there was a part of it you thought you were at a MAGA rally. I mean, one woman was just sobbing outside the Knesset. And with just all the sincerity, an elderly woman, she just said, I love you. Speaking of Trump, she said, I really love you. I mean, I really, really love you. They just haven't seen this. There just hasn't been this joy. The Knesset had a big sign out front, Welcome Trump, who, when he spoke, gave credit to Jared Kushner and Mr. Witkoff, who actually talked with Hamas directly. But then he concluded with stating that Marco Rubio is the greatest Secretary of State in the history of the United States. Now, what I took from that and the elevation of Marco through all of this and his work is that I think he may well be the 2028 Republican candidate. He would have my support. This is nothing against J.D. Vance. J.D. is an absolute great vice president doing the tough job, the bare knuckle work that a vice president needs to do. But, and I'll make this comparison, if Trump is sort of a Winston Churchill in wartime, whom no one else could possibly fill those shoes other than Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill was not the greatest leader of England when peace was restored. And so it may be that J.D.'s role is complete when Trump is complete. May well be. And now a person with a softer tone, somebody with a charisma, somebody that speaks Spanish, somebody who has a gentility but is committed to godly convictions. I think you may have found him in Marco Rubio. I was impressed and moved to this conclusion just by hearing him at the Charlie Kirk Memorial, which I shared at how great he was. And I came away from that and I thought, boy, this kid can preach. That's what I thought. But he has a great personality. You would have thought Trump was addressing Congress in the State of the Union address. And to hear the Knesset at times chanting USA, USA, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, one building in Jerusalem that evening was lit up, one of the government buildings, in red, white, and blue. Trump referred to Jerusalem as their capital forever. Quote, it's holy land, you're on sacred ground. End quote. But then I got to drop back as to how did this happen? And I'm going to conclude with some other remarks before I get to the 20 points. It really started with Midnight Hammer, the absolute destruction of Iran's nuclear capabilities through our deployment of the B-52s, which just smacked them upside the head. And then the strategic hits that came in from F-35s flown by Israeli pilots to take out certain targets, the killing of a number of high-level individuals. How Israel knows about this, how Mossad pulls that off, I have no idea how they got to that. But basically, where the release of the hostages started was with Midnight Hammer. And you had to start with taking off the head of the snake that was funding Hamas, followed up by Israel's role in just shellacking and bombing the guts out of Gaza. People think this is unnecessary and all the dead. I'm sorry. It was necessary. It was critical. You fight a little tit-for-tat war. Well, we won't do anything worse to you than you've done to us, blah, blah, blah. In other words, the Democrat way to fight war. The bombing was absolutely necessary to reduce that place to rubble where they finally had to give up. And there's one other thing that the bombing did that was critical ultimately in the negotiation was the fact that that show of force and the destruction of Gaza and what would be an increasing number of refugees, so to speak, fleeing Gaza for Egypt, brought Egypt into the mix. It brought Egypt to the table as a partner, a supporter for getting rid of Hamas. If we don't get rid of Hamas, we're going to end up with 2 million Gazanians here in Egypt because they're going to have no place to go. They aren't going to Israel. They aren't going to the West Bank. So that was critical. That was the second aspect of the bombing, which then, of course, led to the unbelievable process of the negotiation, which I can't even believe the Biden administration is trying to say. They had a large role to play in this. We left all the instructions and directions in the drawer. Are you kidding me? This is what Anthony Blinken, stinking Blinken, says. They can't, I mean, fortunately, some people, even including the Clintons, not including Obama, but even the Clintons have credited Trump with this. Even Chuck E. Cheese Schumer has credited Trump with this. So there's some people, and maybe they're thinking, look, we can't look like the worst jerks in the world. We got to give a shout out to the guy because he did what no one else could do. So moving back. So to my other comments here, the importance of this Operation Midnight Hammer and the B-52s was just, I just can't overstate that. But then Donald Trump goes to Egypt. Where what happens in Egypt? Well, Egypt awards him the highest honor, the highest honor their nation can award, which I've never heard of, the Order of the Nile. And so you've got 20 Arab and Muslim nations assembled there, which kind of humorously Trump said they came with about 20 minutes notice because nobody really knew how this was going to turn out for a fact, for another peace accord, along with a whole bunch of other nations there that were also represented beyond those 20 Arab and Muslim nations. But to see Trump speaking, and he spoke for quite a while. The guy does not know how to keep it short, but he's got 20 nations, Arab and Muslim nations, with one British guy there behind him, but all standing behind him. They were there. I mean, it's like Trump owned them. Trump owned the place. They're all lined up supporting him. And then the Pakistani president comes up to speak to nominate Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, stating, who but Trump could end 8 wars in 8 months? And at least for a period of time, what I saw in Egypt was that Donald Trump became president of the world. There's some rogues. Yeah, Russia, China. But for right now, he's kind of president of the world. How long it will last? Well, you're going to be blown away by some of the things I'm going to share in the 20-point plan in just a minute. It was so incredible, and hopefully, you know, you're going to be able to see some of that. I watched it for 3 hours. I just quit work. I said, I've stopped. This is far more important. I will remember this 3 hours the rest of my life, where any 3 weeks from now, I won't remember what I was otherwise going to do in the next 3 hours, prioritizing my time. I mean, Trump had some of these leaders actually laughing, just being Trump, blowing off the protocol normally associated with these events. And when he was all done, I just thought, you know what? He chucks his protocol. And I thought, he's an American. He's a real estate developer from the Bronx. What else would you expect? And yeah, he says some things I would not have said. He seems to get away with them because whatever he says is good. It seems outweigh kind of the miscues. It's just... Oh, man, it was something else. Okay, so let's move on here now to the 20-point thing. And I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of the 20 points. Then I'm going to actually read the 20 points with some comments. And you'll be surprised. I mean, I encourage you to find the 20 points. It's easy to get them on the internet and read them and then start to say, oh, boy, can we do this? Can that happen? This looks like a problem. And in one sense, there's only two things that I know for a fact can and were achieved. They might be the only two, actually, but it was still worth the effort, still worth the Nobel Peace Prize. And those things are the ceasefire and the exchange of prisoners. And that's happened. So it's all that I can actually say at the time I'm doing this, which I'm actually I'm taping this on a Wednesday, the 15th, because I have a couple speaking engagements back in the Midwest this weekend, and I can't do it later. So I don't think any of this will be outdated. But Trump announced that the first phase of the 20-point peace plan, being the exchange of the prisoners, was accomplished. It's actually not point one, but that doesn't really matter to me from that standpoint. There is a point made very clear that Hamas will not be part of the rebuilding, at least technically not Hamas. Who knows if some of the leopards actually can change their spots, so to speak. That's coming up. That's going to be an issue. The withdrawal of the troops. This is not specific to the 20 points as far as the numbers, so I'm going to give you the numbers. The Israel's military, known as the IDF, Israel Defense Forces, agreed to withdraw their troops up to a line that leaves Israel in control of 53% of Gaza. And the White House has now released a map, and I'm a map freak. I looked at this, and but it's the first of three stages of planned Israel withdrawal, if everything goes well. Because after there's some stability, Israel will reduce its control of Gaza from 53% down to 40%. And then after a few other things are accomplished, they will retain a security perimeter of roughly equal to 15% of Gaza, but which will encircle all of Gaza. And that's the security perimeter, which is there to basically make sure that there is not a resurgent terror threat. In other words, whatever might possibly happen inside that part of Gaza that's retained by the Palestinians, it can't get through this barrier without the Israelis knowing about it, and that's going to prevent them from being surprised like they were on October 7th a couple of years ago. You've got the prisoner exchange. I'm going to cover that, though, when I go through the points specifically. And there's aid coming in. There's all sorts of kinds of things going on. The U.S. is sending, this is not in the 20 points, but the U.S. is sending 200 troops to Israel to help maintain the ceasefire. No, to monitor the ceasefire. So I guess there's a couple hundred troops there that are making sure that everybody is playing nice in the sandbox. Trump has made it quite clear that no U.S. troops will be deployed directly inside Gaza itself. It's going to be apparently part of the perimeter security force. I don't exactly know how that's going to work, and they haven't said. But the United States and the Arab and other international partners, as described by Trump, are going to join forces to form the International Stabilization Force, brand new, now known as the ISF, the International Stabilization Force, to immediately deploy in Gaza for security as it undergoes a transition from war to hopeful, peaceful governance. The ISF will also train and support, quote, vetted Palestinian police forces. Now, end quote. I don't know how that's going to work out. How do you vet them? How do you get people that were part of Hamas saying that they were never part of Hamas? They always hated Hamas. They wanted to dump Hamas. They wanted to have a coup and overthrow them. I don't know. I don't know how that happens. The plan aims for the IDF to hand over progressively occupied Gazan territory as Israel then withdraws. And then Gaza will transition to this temporary transitional, this is in quotes, temporary transitional governance of a technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee, end quote. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 adjectives to describe this committee. And it's going to, and that will operate under an international board headed by who? Donald Trump. And it will be called the Board of Peace. Well, that's what Trump calls it. But he's head of the board that's going to oversee the security to set this framework to help monitor Gaza's redevelopment and whatnot. And the demilitarization, trying to permanently put beyond use all weapons that could be used for military purposes, terror purposes, any offensive infrastructure through a buyback program. They're going to be destroyed. And it should be known here, this is a condition that Hamas, those signing the agreement, has refused in the past. And they are expected to resist. They're going to have a panel of experts that will convene and come out with an economic development plan to rebuild and energize Gaza through, quote, thoughtful investment proposals and exciting development ideas to create jobs, opportunity, and hope for Gaza. And there was no further elaboration on this, but understand, I can see where this is going. This goes all the way back to Trump's suggestion from about 8 months ago that what Gaza should do is develop a whole bunch of 4- and 5-star hotels and resorts along what I understand to be a beautiful coast, western exposure on the east end of the Mediterranean, and develop that for tourism and resorts. I mean, what did I just say Trump was? He's an American real estate developer from the Bronx. He's a real estate developer. He thinks this way. He knows this kind of stuff. I still want to get him that letter to suggest that he shut down the UN, take the building back, and turn all of the various international suites into condos and sell them for $1 to $2 million and pay down the national debt. But this is the brilliance of Trump. He's going to be ahead of this thing. And why is it so brilliant? Because the economic development, if Trump's role in this is as big as it sounds like it could be, and he's got to be licking his chops. Hey, this is what I want to do. I can develop real estate in the name of securing peace. What it will do, if this happens, and it becomes a tourist destination, first of all, it will just be in vogue. I mean, all kinds of people, if there was actually security and safety, will go to Gaza to stay at the new Ritz-Carlton. I'm not kidding. I want to go. I'd like to see that. I'd like to say I've been there, see what's going on. But this is the beauty of Trump's plan. It will produce so much revenue. It will make Gaza dependent upon tourism. It's got nothing else there. Come on, it's got nothing else going. But to make it so dependent on tourism, economically dependent, that there is no way that Hamas could take over or run that place or anything else, because there is way too much international money invested in billion-dollar resorts and restaurants and you name it to let that slip away. And the people of Gaza, where are they employed? Well, they say, well, okay, they're running the crap tables or whatever. They're working as waiters. What are they doing now? They don't have jack squat crap diddly for jobs now. Nothing. I'll tell you, the Gazan minimum wage would be a dream come true for these people to actually afford some decent homes and running water and waste disposal. I think it's brilliant. Now, whether we get there, I have no idea. That's the $64,000 question. So how does it look for peace in Gaza? I'm going to save that for the next part of it here when I get down to the actual 20 points. I read them with a little bit of editing, and then I'm going to get to the biblical issue that sits at the end of today's presentation. Point number one of 20 points. Gaza will be a de-radicalized, terror-free zone that does not pose a threat to its neighbors. Gaza, number two, Gaza will be redeveloped for the benefit of the people of Gaza, who have suffered more than enough. Those two things are already wrapped up in the whole idea of turning this into a mega resort area. It's almost all coastal property. You got just enough property for the resorts and the restaurants, and then eastward into the desert enough for the homes for the Gazans, the Gazanians, as I've called them, the Gazans. And then they got a short trip to their job. I mean, my gosh, it could be another United Arab Emirates or Qatar built around not oil, but around tourism. These two points, and it would be de-radicalized. It would be a terror-free zone. Too much money, too much invested, too much security there to let anything wacky happen. Number three. If both sides agree to the proposal, the war will immediately end and Israeli forces will withdraw to the agreed-upon line to prepare for a hostage release. During this time, all military operations, including aerial and artillery bombardment, will be suspended. So there's one, two, and three. Three which has been accomplished. Don't go away. We are just getting rolling here with The Robin Walter Show.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
We are back. Now, beside the fact that I like that song by Question Mark and the Mysterium, it's the only song they ever had. I think they're out of Detroit. The other reason I play that is I try sometimes to have the song fit what I'm talking about. And those are tears of joy. But they're the only tearful song I had. But those are tears of sorrow. And the song Tears of Joy, I mean, I got them switched around. Abundant tears of joy for the peace thing. But it was the only piece I had that talked about tears, so that's why I did that. All right. Back. Point number 4 of the 20. Within 72 hours of Israel publicly accepting the agreement, all hostages alive and deceased will be returned. That has, for the most part, happened at the time of this taping. I do not know whether the bodies of deceased Israelis have all been returned, whether the bones are all returned. Last I knew, they had not. But for the most part, this was accomplished. Number 5, once all hostages are released, Israel will release 250 prisoners plus 1,700 Gazans who were detained after October 7th, including all women and children detained in that context. For every Israeli hostage who remains are released, Israel will release the remains of 15 deceased Gazans. Now, this, for the most part, like I said, has happened. This is just a little more detailed. But I want to bring out the first kind of point that I want to add to the 20 points. Israel gets 20 civilians back. Hamas gets 250 terrorists back. You see why they would actually want this kind of deal? As I said last week, and I should reiterate, Hamas strikes bargains, will cut deals when they're weak. They'll revoke deals when they're strong. Right now, they're totally weak, and through Midnight Hammer, the bombings, and everything, they've been shredded, decimated. From that standpoint, they've got the Iran money cut off. Will they come back? Well, for them right now, another part of the advantage of this deal is they get 250 of their terrorists back, and they only have to give up 20 soldiers? No, they're giving up 20 civilians. No military threat there. Not at all. And 1,700 detainees, which were being detained by Israel, believed to have participated in this. I don't know what the basis upon their detention was created, but out of that 1,700, you got to know that a significant portion of them have an affiliation and an allegiance with and to Hamas and radical Islam. You know that. All 1,700, I don't know. Some of them, absolutely, for sure. So that has been done. Starting with point 6, it's where things really start to pick up. Once all the hostages are returned, Hamas members who commit, this one already gives me the creeps. Point 6, and I'm quoting, once all hostages are returned, Hamas members who commit to peaceful coexistence and to decommission their weapons will be given amnesty. Members of Hamas who wish to leave Gaza will be provided safe passage to receiving countries. I can't believe this for a second. What what, I mean, the Hamas people, they're going to pledge and commit to peaceful coexistence and decommission their weapons. I forgot what the Arabic word is that speaks to the Islamic belief that any and all lies are permissible if the lie advances the cause of Islam. It just came to me now. That's why I wasn't prepared for that. Don't know what it is. I can find out, but they'll lie. That's what I say. They will form a treaty when they're weak, break the treaty when they're wrong. Because if it's in the name of their God, they will do anything. And that sanctifies lying. And it's a critical part, and it's in the Quran. And so there's no such thing. They have committed their lives to the destruction of Israel, that Jerusalem will be part of the Islamic caliphate. This is death, destruction, and elimination. All Jews dead. What true Hamas supporter is going to commit to peaceful coexistence and decommission their weapons? Well, they'll do that, but they won't do that until they have a resupply established. 7. Upon acceptance of this agreement, full aid will immediately be sent to the Gaza Strip. 8. Goes on after number 7, including the rehabilitation of hospitals and bakeries and sewage and entry of necessary equipment to remove rubble and open roads. It's interesting that it says the rehabilitation of hospitals and bakeries. Those are the only two besides governmental services like sewage and electricity, the only two infrastructure businesses, not infrastructure, two businesses references are hospitals and bakeries. I just didn't know the Palestinians were into baguettes and croissants, but maybe they are. Number 8, entry of distribution and aid in the Gaza Strip will proceed without interference from the two parties through the United Nations and its agencies and the Red Crescent. Not the Red Cross, the Red Crescent. That's an Islamic organization. In addition to other international institutions not associated in any manner with either party, opening the Rafah crossing in both directions will be subject to the same mechanism implemented in January of 2025 in that agreement. So, all right, no international interference. The United Nations, under the guide of the United Nations, where has the United Nations been for the last 20 years? How many times have they attempted to condemn anything and everything that Israel has done while providing aid, support, and arguing for and on behalf of the Gazanians? To assume that the United Nations is a neutral party is a fool's conclusion. They are not. This is yet another piece, like the decommissioning and the promise to peaceful coexistence, having the United Nations. Now, you're going to begin to see why after the first couple of points, a ceasefire and the exchange of hostages, all of which is noteworthy, the rest of the 20 points, which no one is talking about, almost, in my opinion, seems to guarantee the, non-success of this. Okay, number 9. Gaza will be governed under the temporary transitional governance of a technocratic, which I mentioned this earlier, apolitical Palestinian committee responsible for delivering the day-to-day running of public services and municipalities for the people of Gaza. The committee will be made up of qualified Palestinians. I'm already suspect. And international experts. I'm further suspect. Who, with oversight and supervision by a new international transitional body called the Board of Peace, which will then be headed and chaired by Donald Trump. I will tell you, the only way this could possibly work, pulling in international bodies and qualified Palestinians, is to have Trump in charge. Trump will have to own this Board of Peace like he owned the confab in Egypt the other day. He has to be in charge. It will derail if he is not. Now, here's what I see, and boy, this thought just came to me right now, what I'm seeing. Not only is this real estate developer from the Bronx the right guy to do this, this may be the beauty of him being termed out and not being able to run again as he devotes more time, assuming he's in good health, he's alive and in good health. I guess that is good health, right? That he's in charge of this, a task that's right up his alley. It's his wheelhouse to develop the biggest piece of real estate he's ever been able to develop in his life, the Gaza Strip. And he could do it after he's out of office and while Marco Rubio becomes president. Man, I'm just getting excited. And I have to tell you, this is one of these programs where I've prepared quite a bit, but I can't believe how much I feel like the Holy Spirit is giving me. That's as far as I can go with that. The body that's set up will set the framework and handle the funding of the redevelopment of Gaza until such time as the Palestinian Authority has completed its reform program as outlined in various proposals, including President Trump's role, the Saudi French proposal, and some other things, which talks about ultimately the people of Gaza taking back control. And that's not going to happen until Trump is ready to turn it over. Until, in my opinion, it's so fully developed that there is no way that the Palestinians on the rogue side, the ones who are really, truly out for blood and the elimination of Israel, that it can't happen. Until you've got Jews and you've got the Knesset vacationing in Gaza. I mean, all of this stuff is just flooding me right now. I mean, I'm seeing stuff. Maybe this is just wishful thinking, but I'm seeing stuff that I didn't imagine before I even began this taping. Number 10, the Trump Economic Development Plan to Rebuild and Energize Gaza will be created by convening a panel of experts who have helped birth some of the thriving modern miracle cities in the Middle East through thoughtful investment proposals, exciting development ideas, and stuff that I actually read a little bit earlier. Number 11, a special economic zone will be established. Hang on. This is Trump all over this thing. A special economic zone will be established with preferred tariff rates to be negotiated with participating countries. This has got Donald Trump written all over it. Donald Trump's got tariffs written into the 20-point peace plan. Why? Because the tariff rates are going to help ensure the economic stability, which will be so significant, only an absolute crazed, maniacal Islamic whack job, of which there are a fair number, will try to upset that. But hopefully, the vested interests of enough people who are only there for the money, yeah, that's okay here, will help maintain the peace. 12, no one will be forced to leave Gaza, and those who wish to leave will be free to do so. We'll encourage people to stay and offer them the opportunity to build a better Gaza. Yeah, it's going to be jobs. It's going to be running those bakeries. I want to taste a Palestinian baked good. I do. I'm into that kind of stuff. I love baked goods. I love French bakeries. Maybe the French will build some bakeries there. Number 13, Hamas and other factions agree to not have any role in the governance of Gaza, directly or indirectly or in any form. All military terror and offensive infrastructure, including tunnels and weapon production facilities, will be destroyed and not rebuilt. There will be a process of demilitarization of Gaza under the supervision of independent monitors which will include placing weapons permanently beyond the use through an agreed process of decommissioning and supported by an internationally funded buyback program and reintegration program, all verified by the independent monitors. It will be called, here, number 14, New Gaza. New Gaza. Nobody's even mentioned that term. Will be fully committed to building a prosperous economy and to a peaceful coexistence with their neighbors. 14. A guarantee will be provided by regional partners to ensure that Hamas and the factions comply with their obligations and that New Gaza poses no threat to its neighbors or its people. That's only through a, and I'm going to just adding this on, it's only through a vested economic interest. Billions of oil money going into that. Trump will cut a deal. He'll be into partnerships, which will be much easier to do once he's not president. I'm getting excited. 15, the United States will work with Arab and international partners to develop a temporary international stabilization force to immediately deploy in Gaza. The ISF will train and provide support to vetted Palestinian police forces in Gaza, which we talked about before. That's no easy job. And will consult, I like this part, with Jordan and Egypt, who have extensive experience in this field. This force will be the long-term internal security solution. The ISF will work with Israel and Egypt to help secure border areas along with newly trained Palestinian police forces. It's critical to prevent munitions from entering Gaza and to facilitate the rapid and secure flow of goods to rebuild and revitalize Gaza. I am hopeful and helpful with the idea that Jordan and Egypt are involved. Egypt and Jordan are part of the Abraham Accord. And while they are not in love with Israel, there have not been hostilities really going back to the Yom Kippur War, which is, what was that, 1987 or something? The 1967 was the Six-Day War, and the Yom Kippur War was after that. It's been a long time, a really long time. Of the two nations I would want involved in this, it would be Jordan and Egypt. Trump knows how to pick the partners, not pick apart. He knows that too, but to pick the right partners. Number 16, Israel will not occupy or annex Gaza. As the ISF establishes control and stability, the Israeli Defense Forces will withdraw based on the standards, milestones, and timeframes linked to demilitarization that will be agreed upon. And going on to what I had said earlier about the 53% retention going down to 40% retention of Gaza land by the IDF. And as the stability is further confirmed or assured or to whatever extent necessary, they will then withdraw back to the 13% of the former Gaza as what likely will be a permanent security perimeter for the nation of Israel. So the Israeli government will remain involved. 17. In the event Hamas delays or rejects this proposal, the above, including the aid operations, will proceed on those areas that are terror-free and have been handed over from the Israeli Defense Force to the International Security Force. I'm not sure I totally understand this, but they don't want to withdraw aid from those areas that are in control by the IDF or the International Security Force in the event that Hamas reneges. What I don't understand or all I don't know is how they renege if they go back to violence or what have you. 18, I don't know how this works at all. An interfaith dialogue process will be established based on the values of tolerance and peaceful coexistence to try and change mindsets and narratives of Palestinians and Israelis by emphasizing the benefits that can be derived from peace. Boy, God bless you guys if you can pull this off. How to change mindsets of Hamas and a lot of the Palestinians about Jews, or the Jews about the Palestinians. No, I'm not, I don't like this. I think it's impossible. But I hate to have something in the 20-point plan that is impossible and then gives one side or the other now the presumed right to revoke some of it because they can't implement all of it. I mean, there's biblical passages that point to the fact that these sides will fight forever, that the peace is transitory, because we know in the Word it says that in the end, all nations come against Israel. All nations. All nations. So this is a, it's pie in the sky. I mean, you might try it, but how do you establish a tolerance and peaceful existence and change mindsets when Israel believes in the Torah, the Islamists are stuck with a Quran, and the Quran talks in it, in the Quran. When you find a Jew or a Christian behind a rock or hiding behind a tree to kill them, that's a passage out of the Quran. This is black and white. This will never work. It will never happen. Does that mean the rest of it couldn't happen? No, I wouldn't say that. I just don't want this, the inability for the Islamists to say, well, the Jews aren't accepting the Quran or whatever. How this plays out, I don't know. The fact is it never will play out. But the worst part of it is Gaza's redevelopment advances. When they're finally in a place for a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood. I'm going to read number 20 quickly because I got to finish up fast. The United States will establish a dialogue between Israel and Palestinians to agree on a political horizon for peaceful and prosperous coexistence. Fine. Hope that works out. But number 19 is a sticking point. While Gaza redevelopment advances, when the PA reform program is faithfully carried out, the conditions may finally be in place for a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood, which we recognize as the aspiration of the Palestinian people. Okay, there are so many qualifications here, it won't happen. When the reform program is faithfully carried out, number one, well, maybe not, the conditions might be in place for a possible or credible pathway, not an assurance, to Palestinian self-determination and statehood. Okay, Benjamin Netanyahu said, no way, Jose, will there ever be a Palestinian statehood. It's not happening. There's not going to be the two-state solution is the final solution. It cannot happen. There are so many contingencies wrapped up into point number 19, though. There are, and the only reason Netanyahu could agree to this is because he's got about three or four things to point to be able to say this hasn't been done, and that hasn't been done, and also this hasn't been done, so that there is not a credible pathway to that. You haven't created the credible pathway, so we are not going to give in to Palestinian statehood when that pathway hasn't been created, because you have not faithfully fulfilled out the reform program or the conditions necessary. No, there's a way out. It's not going to happen. That's the only reason that Netanyahu or any good Jewish leader who would rightfully and properly refuse Palestinian statehood has a way out. But there is a path to at least a modicum of peace for a period of time. What haunts all of this is this passage. Write it down. 1 Thessalonians 5:3. I love it. We're all cheering peace, peace, peace. But then there's the hard truth of 1 Thessalonians 5:3, which I understand, if you read that passage and in its context, clearly points to a time inside the tribulation and, to me, at the end of the tribulation, at which time we are not. but. So maybe it speaks to a different time and place, but it says, when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman. Sudden destruction. Will this fall apart? Well, thinking, what's sudden travail upon a woman with a birth, right? Coming forth as travail upon a woman. 9 months. I don't know. I'm getting carried away to think that this will only last 9 months. But that'd be an interesting perspective on this thing. I think this is for the end of the tribulation, so maybe it's a different time of even a greater peace. Maybe this peace falls apart, and yet a greater peace presumably is established during the tribulation, and then the sudden destruction comes upon them. I don't know. Stay tuned. We'll have to find out. God bless you. Sit tall in the saddle, America. Remember, you ride for the brand of Jesus Christ. We'll see you next week.